Welcome to the Student of the Game Fire Podcast with your host, Danny B. Today's guest is Bo Vest, second-generation firefighter with 27 years of combination experience, captain with a training division for Little Rock Fire in Arkansas. From an early age, Bo watched his grandfather operate as a volunteer. There were times when they were completing a task and a call comes in and his grandfather would stop what he was doing to run the call. And from there, Bo knew he wanted to do just that. Bo applied everywhere he could around him until Little Rock called and gave him what he always dreamed of. From there, he was surrounded with individuals he wanted to emulate, but also learn from those that weren't into it as we would like. Climbing through the ranks, an opportunity presented itself within the training division, and Bo took it. Bo believes in accountability, standards, sweat, and suffering. One of my favorite quotes from Bo is, "I've never regretted a workout." With that, I present Bo Vest.
My name's Bo Vest. I'm a captain with Little Rock Fire Department. I've been with Little Rock since 2001, currently assigned to the training division. Been with training division since March. Before that, I worked downtown. I was a company officer on an engine company and spent most of my career on an engine, assigned to an engine, either as a company officer, driver. Spent several years early on in my career as a firefighter assigned to the heavy rescue. And before I came on here, I started out as a volunteer when I was 19 years old, as soon as they would allow me to join the department. And how I got into this, you know, how I got into this whole career is just, I was one of those kids, man, that grew up wanting to be a firefighter. My grandfather was a firefighter. I spent a lot of time hanging out with him, and he was from a small town, and that was their fire department. It was all volunteer. He owned a kind of a auto body store shop, whatever, and he went to work full time every day. And then if there was a fire, he dropped what he was doing and went and jumped on a fire truck. And so I grew up watching that and just thinking that was the coolest thing ever. And then as I got older and figured out that you could actually do it full time and make a living at it, then I was like, man, that's what I want to do. That's, you know, and I've never regretted a day of it. Never looked back, never thought, man, I should have done something else or tried something else. I've always loved it. So just completely nerd out on this stuff.
Okay. So with that being said, you're essentially what, like second generation?
More or less. So yeah, So it was my grandfather, and then my dad was a school teacher, which then he moved up into he principal, and he was also a coach. He was in the military, and so. And then my brother also, I've got a younger brother, 2 years younger than me, that kind of followed in his footsteps. And he went, you know, military, and he's also a CrossFit, big CrossFit guy. He owns a CrossFit gym, and he does recruiting for the military now, National Guard, Arkansas National Guard. But so yeah, we kind of followed in our dad's footsteps in a way of I guess, being a teacher in our careers. And our, you know, my dad was a high school teacher. And then here I am years later, I've landed myself out in training. And then my brother does a lot of training and stuff with the physical fitness stuff. And then also with his position in the military. So we've all kind of taken that same path in a way, I guess.
Okay. With that being said, can you tell us about your journey getting on the Little Rock? When you decided that this is what you wanted to do career wise, did you apply to all different places, or did you solely focus on Little Rock?
Man, I did. I applied all over, and I stayed local at first, and then just started branching out. And Little Rock was still the biggest city in Arkansas, and I always had that kind of as an end goal. If I was going to do this, I wanted to work for a big city, but I was willing to get my foot in the door anywhere. And so I was applying it at some of the smaller towns, and I can remember making it to the interview process in several departments, and they would always ask me the same thing. Do you plan on making a career here at this department, or would you like to go somewhere bigger, busier? And I would always be honest and answer like I would, I'd really like to go somewhere busier. So I didn't know at the time they didn't like that answer, but I just couldn't figure out why I wasn't getting hired at all these departments. But man, it worked out. I got hired in Little Rock, and I was actually with the whole testing process of Little Rock. There's like a lot of departments. There's the written exam at first, and then a physical fitness exam and an interview. And I was testing. Also, I tested at Memphis, which is about 2 hours from here. And I was scheduled to go do the physical fitness portion of the Memphis exam. And Little Rock just moved faster with their hiring process. And I found out that I was on the list to get hired here. So I just pursued Little Rock and never followed through with the Memphis deal. But I was looking, if it didn't work out at Little Rock, then I was just kind of branching out further and further. Memphis was on my radar, Dallas, St. Louis. Oh, man, I was wanting to go anywhere. And so this was the first place they hired me, and so I've stuck with it.
Okay. With that being said, can you tell us a little bit about Little Rock? The size, how many stations, your approximate call volume, things of that nature.
Man, I should know this as far as the square miles of Little Rock.
No, that's fine. I mean, you
But
don't need to go that detailed. Like, how many stations
right.
you got?
So 20, 20, I believe 24 stations now. 24 stations. Call volume varies from just different parts of the city. We've got companies that run as much as 15, 20 calls a day, and some engine companies that run 15, 20 calls a day, and that's a combination of medicals, and then of course fire alarms, and then all your other stuff in there too. And you have a few companies as you get further to the outskirts of the city, you've got companies that might not run 20 calls in a month. So all the engine companies I worked on, I think we were kind of right there in the middle to high end. We would average 10 to 15 calls a day most of the time. I think the busiest shift for me was, I think I did 24 calls in a 24-hour shift one day. That was a day we had some weather move through. We were scattered all over the city. I actually ended up running a fire, whether I was first, second in, whatever. We made a fire in every battalion in the city that through that shift. So it was pretty wild. But yeah, I'm not somebody that likes to come to the firehouse and sit around. I got hired to go to fires and to run calls, and so that's where I would always seek out the companies that were doing that because that's what I wanted to do.
Okay. And how many engine companies do you have?
Engines we have 20 to 23 engines, I believe. Yeah, 23 engines total.
And ladders.
And ladders, I'm not, I want to say 10 or 11 ladders.
Okay. And do you guys operate true engine, true ladders? Like, are ladders, or do you have quints?
No, we do. We have the true ladder trucks. They don't have a pump, they don't have any water. We don't have any quints. So the engines are our engines. We've got one heavy rescue. And then we also provide service for the Little Rock National Airport. So there's three, I believe, three ARFF units that cover, and they're strictly airport. They're Little Rock Fire Department employees, but they don't leave the airport ground, right? They're assigned out there. They stay assigned to the ARFF units. I did a short stint out there. Just it was part of being assigned to the heavy rescue. You had to be cross trained in ARFF. Our firefighting and aircraft rescue. And so spend a little time out there. I mean, it was a neat thing to know and to be able to drive and operate those rigs, but definitely, not not busy enough. You know, thankfully you don't want to be busy out there, but it just
Right.
not something I really enjoyed, but they were pretty cool to learn how to do all that stuff.
Okay. So long story short, ARF is an acquired taste.
I believe so. Yeah.
Okay.
I think so. I could, you know, some guys, they move out there toward the end of their career, and it's kind of like, almost like, I'm not saying those guys retire out there, but you hear the same story from the guys that move out there as the ones that do retire. And they're like, man, I wish I would have done this several years ago. So you go out there and you know, eventually everybody, you do get tired of running and getting up at night multiple times a night. It takes a toll on you
Yeah,
eventually. And
definitely.
so you know, if it's something that you still got a few years left in your career and you're not ready to just completely hang it up yet, then it's still a firehouse. You know, you're still hanging out at the firehouse every day. And so that, to me, that's part of the job too. That's just as enjoyable as anything. So, yeah, it's the guys that are out there, they seem to like it, but it definitely wasn't my thing at the time.
Okay. And as far as your the minimum staffing on the apparatus, how many do you try to keep on the engine and on the ladder?
So minimum staffing on all of our rigs is 3 personnel minimum. You got a driver, an officer, and at least one firefighter. The only rig that runs more staffing than that is our heavy rescue, and they have 4 firefighters in the back. So a driver, a company officer, and then minimum of 4 in the back, sometimes 5.
Oh, 4 or 5 firefighters in the back of the truck.
Yeah, they
Oh,
run
wow.
their staff pretty heavy,
okay.
But it takes it. And I spent maybe 8 years on assigned to rescue two, the heavy rescue, and so we did high angle, we did water rescue, swift water, trench rescue, collapse, everything. You know, you were responsible for all of it. So it was a big operation, and of course we also ran. We ran structure fires too, that were there in the district, or any big building in the city, businesses, apartments, hotels, any large occupancy structure. Rescue 2 was always assigned to the call, and so I got over there and I stayed there for quite a while, just because of the variety of stuff that we responded to, and you stayed busy, saw a wide range of calls. And but yeah, you were heavily staffed over there because there was a lot to do, especially on your technical rescue stuff.
Okay. Okay. And do you guys provide ALS or BLS service, or and also do you transport or no?
No, we don't transport. The ambulance service is separate. So there's a few of us that are paramedics, but we don't provide any ALS service. The only reason I went to paramedic school to begin with, we were talking about all the different apartments I applied to, and I applied to one department and made it to the interview with the chief, and he was looking over my resume and everything, and he told me, he said, if you were a paramedic, I'd hire you right now. And I said, really? Okay, well, game on then. I'm going to go to paramedic school, and y'all won't get me on that again. And so initially that wasn't on my radar. I had no desire to be in the back of an ambulance, but if it was going to help me get a job at a fire department, then I was all for it. But as far as what Little Rock, no, we don't transport no ambulances in the stations, and we run BLS. Of course, like everywhere else right now, the EMS service is just swamped all the time. So it was, it's highly possible to spend 10 or 15 minutes on a scene somewhere. And then I've had occasional calls where I've been there longer waiting on an ambulance to get on scene.
Okay. And if for a first due structural box residential, what's Little Rock's first alarm assignment consist of?
Our first alarm assignment on just a residential is 4 engines, a ladder, and 2 battalion chiefs. And if it's in the downtown area, which Station 2, Rescue 2 is stationed not far from downtown. So they will, a lot of times, even if they're not assigned to the initial alarm, they they'll hear the dispatch and they'll jump on the box as well. So they make a lot of calls in the downtown area, whether they are initially assigned to the alarm or not. And then commercial, well, like I was saying, they're assigned to all commercial structure fires, but our initial commercial response is six engines, two ladders, and still two battalion chiefs, and then the heavy rescue.
Okay. And how many battalions do you have?
Right now we have four.
Four. Okay.
City's divided into four battalions.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. So upon applying for Little Rock, you get the phone call, hey, we'd love to have you. You come on board. Was there some sort of recruit class that you had to go through?
So there is, and we do Little Rock, we do our own academy. So we start you from zero, no experience. We put you through firefighter one and firefighter two. You know, we follow the State Fire Academy standards, the Red Book, the IFSTA manual, and we also put you through EMT basic. If you want to pursue anything further than that, as far as paramedic or anything, you have to do that on your own. So, I have already had I'd been through the State Fire Academy prior to getting hired at Little Rock, or before getting hired at Little Rock. I'd already been through the State Academy, already had my EMT, basic, paramedic, all that. So we do have a fast track program. And so for people that's it's you know like kind of similar to a lateral transfer that a lot of departments do. If you come to Little Rock from another career department and you have at least a year or more experience, then we put you through the fast track program, and you don't have to go through and start all over and go through the entire academy 16 weeks. So the fast track program is 2 to 3 weeks, just
Oh, okay.
depending on how well that the people are doing that are in that program. If we feel like that they're pretty squared away and they're showing proficiency and everything, then we go ahead after 2 weeks and they get assigned to a company. If we feel like they're kind of rusty in some areas, then we might request to keep them another week and just to polish them up and make sure that they're up to speed on everything like the way we like it.
Okay. All right. So with you going through the academy, what was your first assignment upon graduation?
So my first assignment was Engine 19, and it's in Southwest Little Rock. And single engine house. It was cool at the time because my captain, he had been around for a while, and this was back when you could still smoke in the firehouse, like actually in the living quarters. And he smoked cigarettes all day and drank coffee, and just absolutely could not beat him to the front door of a fire. He would come off the rig, get the line stretched, and he was a phenomenal firefighter, but then or at the firehouse, just as laid back as a person could get. So Engine 19 is still and always has been a really busy company as for structure fires. They burn a lot. It's in a kind of a more, you know, I guess lower income part of the city, and also has one of the few leftover mobile home parks, has a very large mobile home park in their first end district. So we made a lot of mobile home fires, and then they still do because it's a lot of mobile homes in that area, and some other houses that are not in the greatest shape. So still just if I had a chance to go back there, if I came out of training, then I would not hesitate because you fight a lot of fire on Engine 19.
All right. So with that being said, you walk through the doors of Engine 19, you meet your crew, you meet your captain. Was there any room for slugs in a sense, or was everybody up to par into the job, ready to go?
Everybody at this station, they were I'd say they were pretty much into the job. They were good to go. Man, I was, you know, I felt like I was super young at the time, and some of these guys that were assigned to this engine were more of your old kind of salty firefighters. And And that was, almost 20, that was 20, what, 24 years ago almost. And the mentality was different back then. It wasn't as far as like, hey, let's get out and train, and let's stretch lines and do all this. It's like, all right, kid, let's take you out and see what you know. And you sort of had to prove yourself. And once you proved that you could do the job, it was like, all right, you're good to go. And so then it was hanging out and just waiting on the bell to hit.
Okay, so what would you say now, or would you say to the upcoming generation, the future generation of the fire service, on kind of finding those mentor or mentors that you want to truly emulate to be good at the job?
Yeah, so and that was when I was when I got moved out of Engine 19. They used to move you around,
Okay.
and so they moved me after 2 years there so they could put another recruit there, because that was you'd go through the academy or the fast track program, and it's like, all right, you're out of school now, out of the academy, we're gonna put you on a busy company, and it's kind of like, trial by fire. All right, we're here. You'll learn everything else you need to know at this company. You're going to make a lot of fires and you'll figure it out from there. And so I got moved from Engine 19 over to Engine 14. And my company officer at the time wasn't as much of a go-getter. We were still running some calls over there, but it wasn't as busy as I wanted to be. And so that, that's when I had the opportunity after a year there to move downtown to Station 2 and get on Engine 2 with a highly motivated crew, company officers all the way through firefighters. And it was, yeah. And those guys were, hey, you're going to know your job. You're going to know your district. You're going to know every building, every connection. You're going to know all the tools on the rescue, how they work. And so, it was intimidating at first, but that was also that's kind of what I was looking for. And I was like, all right, man, these guys, this is legit. They're holding me accountable. And I'm either gonna figure this stuff out and learn it and prove that I know my stuff, or they're gonna find somebody that does. So, I think as a young firefighter coming on the job, and things are a lot different now as far as, they don't just the company officer doesn't just kick you out to the engine bay and say, hey, go through the rig and figure out what's on it, Don't bother me, now. And I did that as a company officer. It was like, what do you want to know? What do you want to, let's open up this compartment. What do you want to look at today? What do you got questions about? Let's figure it out. Let's get out. And if it was a tool or something that we didn't use a whole lot, well, man, let's go, let's take it out. Let's go drill. Let's train with it. And so, I think that's important as a new person or a young person coming on the job is find those company officers or those senior firefighters. It doesn't have to be a captain or an officer, but find those guys that are engaged and those crews that are engaged and like to go out and drill, or even if it's just down in the engine bay. But that's, I think that's where I would really, even with these recruit classes that I've been a part of out here in training, sometimes we don't have that much control over who they get assigned to. And that's what I tell them is just, if you're not on a very busy company, don't get discouraged. Make it through your year, learn everything you can learn. And if wherever you're assigned, if it's not as busy as you'd like to be, then seek out a busy company. Seek out, those companies that you see out here at training all the time. Because we also, besides having our academy out here, and we've got we have a full gym out here. We've got the training tower. And so you get to see that as the recruits, and we kind of encourage our recruits to pay attention. Like, hey, look, don't notice what companies that you see coming out here almost on a daily basis, whether it's to the gym to work out, or if they're out at the forcible entry prop working on their skills out there, if they're out on the drill field flowing water, pay attention to that and see who you notice out here on a regular basis. That's the companies that you want to seek out. That's who you want to be a part of. And I tried to be that, not to not that I had anything to prove to anybody, but when I was still assigned to company, we spent a lot of time out here on the drill field. And when there was a recruit class going on, a lot of times they would bring the recruits out there if we'd be drilling, and they would have us, hey, talk to these recruits and tell them what are you guys working on today? And so we always enjoyed doing that and just letting them know, like, hey, it doesn't stop once you get out of the academy. Here I am with 20 something years on. I'm still out here doing drills. My driver, at the time had 12, 15 years on, and he's still out here pumping and running through stuff. Like, we just like to encourage them. It keeps going. Like, it's just that constant pursuit of perfection at this job that you never achieve, but you're always chasing it.
Right. Okay. So how long did you left 19 and then you went to 14, and after 14 you got your dream station 2, you're on the engine. And of course we know you eventually transferred to the rescue. So my question to you is though, how long did you wait before you decided to move up in rank and why?
Man, I waited. So in Little Rock, you can test for driver after 5 years of service. And I think I waited. I think I was on almost 12 years before I finally tested. And really don't, I couldn't tell you exactly why, other than I enjoyed where I was at. I enjoyed riding in the back of Rescue 2 and doing that. And I guess just one day I woke up and decided, hey, that's enough of this. I'd kind of like to do something a little different. Maybe I'd like to start driving again. But all of us were that way. So we had a crew, and we had all been together for several years. And if I could do it over again, I think maybe I would have tried to promote to driver a little sooner, looking back, because that was really, I mean, that was fun. I can't describe it any other way. I really enjoyed driving. But when I made driver, I didn't want to hang out there long. I was wanting to be a company officer. I guess I'd been on the rescue, and I just kind of hit a plateau as far as my motivation and what I wanted to learn and everything. And I just kind of leveled off for a little while, and then promoted to driver, got back on an engine, and it was kind of a wake-up call for me. I was like, man, I've been riding around in the back of this rescue rig and haven't pumped a fire in a while, and don't really didn't really just I was real rusty on the engine side of stuff. And I was like, man, I need to relearn this. And then that led me down the rabbit hole of when I was starting to really look at different conferences and stuff and get into going to those. And so I didn't stay a driver. I stayed a driver for 3 years and then promoted to captain. And I think the biggest motivation, or the biggest reason I promoted to captain, was I was really starting to kind of get back into the job, and had a lot of ideas in my head. Like, if I ran a company, this is what I'd like to do, or this, I'd like to do things a certain way. And the only way to get that done was to be a company officer and be in charge of of my own crew. And so that was my motivation to do that. I mean, not to boss people around or
Right.
anything, but it was as a driver, if you I had a good crew that I was a part of, but it's hard sometimes if I wanted to go out and drill on something or try something, then you have to get your captain, hey, like, we'd like to go do this. And if he wasn't on the same page, or he didn't feel like doing something, then you always, felt like, well, I'm kind of disturbing everybody else's routine. And so I thought, man, I'd like to go ahead and make my way up to company officer, and then I can hopefully build a crew of motivated individuals that like to go out and are as into the job as I am, and like to drill as just as much as I do. And so that was my motivation b behind promoting up to captain.
Okay. So before I get to that point, when I start asking about some officer questions, you mentioned the conferences kind of reinvigorated you, got you. We all need that recharge. So, how important is it for individuals to get outside their organization and go to these conferences and trainings?
Oh man, I think it's I'd encourage anyone to do it. I mean, no matter what size your department is, if you can afford it, and there's so many out there now, right? There's so many options to go to, and you know, there's more than likely, no matter where you live, there's probably something within driving distance if you just look for it. But yeah, it's really it's a way to recharge. And then, you know, I say all fire departments and all firefighters are basically the same. And so if you are just in a slump at your department because of whatever, man, morale is just in the crapper, or our equipment's this, or we can't get that. And you go to these conferences and you start, and it's not a bitch session where you're just like a bunch of firemen are just griping about how terrible their department is, but you find out these other guys, hey, we face, you know, we're dealing with the same issues at our department. But the cool thing about going to any conference, whatever it is like you're there to get better and you're there to learn something, and you're around other guys and girls or whatever that are too. And it's like, hey man, whatever the deal is, we're all here to learn some stuff. And well, how do y'all do it at your department? Or, you know, what do you, how do y'all operate? You're bouncing ideas off of each other. And so it's like, cool, man. You know, everybody at every department, we all kind of face the same issues. But that's the cool thing about the conferences is it's all like the word gets tossed around all the time. It's all like-minded individuals. And we're all there to train and to make ourselves better. And then the networking aspect of it is phenomenal. You know, it's just like I've got friends all over the place. You know, 20 years ago, whatever, when I got on the department, and if you would have told me, man, you're going to have close friends everywhere from New Jersey all the way to California, I'd have thought, no way. You know, there's, you know, I just know my little bubble of Little Rock people here. But man, yeah, just learning what the way everybody else operates. And some, you know, you have to kind of, you have to sort through it and figure out, well, what, you know, what works for these guys probably wouldn't work for my department, my staffing level. And then you find a lot of people like, hey, that is a great idea. And I can tell you anything as far as tactics, hose loads, anything that I've thrown out there or that we use at Little Rock, it's I've been enough places now that, you know, I give credit to whoever I learned it from. And a lot of times I can't even keep up. I'm like, I learned this somewhere. This is definitely not my idea, but I picked this up at some conference I went to, and it works here. And so a lot of, you know, a lot of stuff I feel like it was, if I just stayed here and I never got outside the Little Rock bubble, I mean, I feel like I would have, you know, I'd have been in a slump for a long time.
Definitely. No, it's definitely, like I said, a recharge, a much needed recharge at times in your career. 'Cause you know, we all face the ebbs and flows, the ups and downs of the fire service. So, well said. When you decided to become captain and you were able to get that through your experiences going through the fire service and seeing, you know, good officers, bad officers, good firefighters, bad firefighters, what kind of officer did you tell yourself, hey, if I get this position, this is the kind of individual I'm going to be?
Well, you know, I had a few officers I worked for, and had both those come up through my career. I had some that I absolutely wanted to be like that. Just, you know, none of us have all the answers, but I had a couple of company officers that I, if they didn't know the answer, they could have fooled me, because it's like they knew everything about their rig, their station, their district, everything. And you know, these guys were just like, I was like, man, there's, I don't know if I'll ever be that level. I'd like to be where you come to me and say, hey, Cap, what about this building? Where's the connections? Where's the alarm panel? Where's, you know, how many floors, how many rooms? And I had some company officers that would just spit out all that knowledge. And so those were the ones I wanted to be like, to just have as much working knowledge about my district, my apparatus, everything on that apparatus. I wanted as much working knowledge as I could get and as I could retain about all that stuff. And so, you know, I just wanted to be kind of like the go-to guy. You know, hey, if you got a question about the district or the apparatus or whatever, you know, I wanted to be that person that had those answers, or at least knew where to look to find those answers. Definitely not one of those company officers like, man, he's, you know, he's on a smoke break. Don't bother him. Don't talk to him. You know, don't go bug him with that. He don't like to talk to people. I didn't want to be that kind of officer. Now, I probably had days where I was like that just for whatever reason, you know, like, hey, just leave me alone today. You know, everybody has their bad, crappy days. But for the most part, I wanted to be the officer that was prepared. And when I did have recruits assigned to me, you know, I used to joke all the time. I was like, man, I keep getting older and older every year, and these recruits stay the same age. And so I would always just kind of mess with them and say, you know, the biggest thing is when the bell hits, you better be on the rig and dressed before I am, because when my door closes, we're leaving. And so that kept, you know, that kept me in check too. Like I couldn't lollygag around when the bell hit. I was out there getting on the rig and getting my stuff on and good to go. And so I never wanted to be that guy like, man, he's old and washed up and got to wait on my captain to come dragging his feet out here to the rig. I was determined to get on that rig and be just as fast out of the house as anyone.
Okay. So with that being said, what led you to the training division? Because it sounds like you love being on the truck. And
man, the training division. So I do love being on the rig, and I love the firehouse life. Got to ask a couple of times, because, and I forgot to mention this at first, but besides working for the fire department, I also worked for a company called Task Force One.
Oh, okay.
And so, if you know, you may be familiar with it, but it's a large pool of instructors from all over, and we travel and we teach and we do on-site classes, and then we also do online stuff as well. And so I've been doing that for a few years. Well, they had some positions open out here in the training division, and I got approached, asked to come out here, and I just kept kind of putting it off. I was like, no, I'm just not ready for that change. You know, I like the fire station life. I like the schedule. I like going to fires. I like hanging out in the firehouse. I like all of it. But it was, man, I don't know. Full disclosure, I came out here. I was dealing with some stuff at home, and I thought going to a more normal work schedule would somewhat help those issues. And so that's how I ended up. That's honestly, that was my biggest motivator for coming out here. And so that's how I ended up, and I've been here for a year now. And so I don't regret coming out here. Everything worked out how it was supposed to work out, I guess. But I'm where I need to be as far as the schedule and everything. And there's a solid group of other training officers out here. I mean, I just, you know, like they always say, if you're the smartest one in the room, you're in the wrong room. Well, I'm definitely not the smartest one in this room. And so we're not going to, you know, I don't respond to fires anymore. I don't sleep at a firehouse every third day, but I've still got just a solid group of guys I'm working with. And so it's still fun coming to work. And these guys are just as motivated as I am about teaching the job, doing the job. And we all love fire. I mean, we've got our burn buildings out here. So on the days that we are doing live fire training, whether it be for company training or recruit training, I mean, we're like a bunch of giddy little kids. We're all bouncing around and giggly because, like, man, we're going to set some stuff on fire today. And so it's fun being around guys that still have that mentality. There's no washed up guys out here. Nobody just trying to get out of work. We really enjoy what we do, and and just everybody's got a ton of knowledge in different areas, and so it's like we're here to give it back to you guys, you know, whoever wants to come out here and train, or the recruits or whatever, and so, man, it's cool to be a part of.
Okay. With that being said, it's my opinion that the training division, especially like if you're a chief or a captain over training, I believe that that individual has a great deal of pull because you set, or the cadre sets the tone of how this is how we're going to do things, whether it's engine company skills, truck company, search, fire, like this is how we will respond to fires. This is how we will respond to incidents. And it starts from training because the way you respond to anything goes back to how you know, the whole adage, practice like you play.
Right.
So in my opinion, like the training division can make a big difference, can make or break a department, really.
Sure. And the training staff out here now, we're all fairly new being here. I mean, from the training chief all the way through myself and the other training captains, I think nobody's been in this division more than 2 or 3 years. We've all pretty fresh off company, and so yeah, we do like to first of all, we stress that to the recruits when they go out on company as wanting them to be very solid in all the basic skills. Like, are you guys are a reflection of us, of the training officers, and that matters to everybody out here. We don't want you to go out here and do a half-assed job, because then it's going to be like, well, what did they teach you in the academy? So, you know, so we it's real important that we build that foundation and that base knowledge with these new recruits. And then the other thing that our training chief has done, and that we all do, is we still really just kind of listen to what's going on around the job. If there's a big fire, and there was just a lot of things go wrong, or some, you know, things not go the way that crews wanted it to go on scene. So we're trying to stay engaged and plugged in on that. I'm like, well, what went wrong, and what can we do out here at training to help correct that so it doesn't happen again? We've been working with companies. Not that anything really went wrong at a certain fire, but we've been working for several weeks now on a search drill. And so just, I think that's for whatever reason, the search culture here in Little Rock, because it's not been just like, it hadn't been pushed as hard as some other type of training. And so we've really been working to bring in and to change our search culture, and make it more aggressive, and just get companies more get more of that search mindset. It was always, for almost as long as I've been on, almost not necessarily an afterthought, but it was just always down the list a little ways. It's like you would get there, first company on scene, you'd make fire attack, truck company would ventilate, and then, you know, you'd hear it, somebody finally key up on the radio, or the battalion chief would assign a company primary search. And that's once we'd already pushed in, made a knock on the fire, truck company was already venting the structure, and so search was like third, you know. And there's a with all this, like the firefighter rescue survey and all this other data that's out there now, we're more educated, and just we know that that's not saving people. And so we're, you know, we're staying plugged in to research like that. And it's like we've got to bring our department up to speed and get more aggressive on search, and get companies more comfortable with, hey, get in there right now, get in there with ahead of the hose line, or right next to the first in engine going in. And so every man, we're getting bringing companies out here and kind of just throwing in a little bit of everything, you know, search, low vis search, victim removal, drags and carries and everything, and just kind of watch and observing companies, how they're doing, where they're lacking and everything. And I just yesterday I had one engine company hit me up because they had been through the drill, and they said, "Man, we want to come out and show us some of those drag techniques you were talking about." And it took, I don't know how many shifts we talked about that because they were busy and they kept getting interrupted. Well, we finally got through it yesterday, but you know, that's what I like to be a part of out here at training. I don't want the credit for it, you know, and all the other company officer guys are just as humble. Like they don't want to say, "Well, hey, Bo showed me this and this is the way Bo did it." But I want the training division and the rest of the guys out here have the same mentality. Like you mentioned, hey, these guys are, this is what the training division's putting out. And this is, we went out there, we did these drills, whether it was search or whatever. This is what we, this was our takeaways. And so we like to get that feedback from the guys out that are still out there on company. Like, "Man, that was a really good drill. I used some stuff that you guys showed me. I used it the next shift," whatever. So yeah, like, you know, just like you said, man, we're trying to change or just make the job a little better, even if it's one company at a time, one company, one drill at a time, and just whatever knowledge we got, we're throwing it out there and just hoping that people are able to pick it up and use it.
No, for sure. And I also would like to preface that even if you have like a cadre group, a training chief, training captain that's pushing out, "Hey, this is how we need to respond. This is how we need to train." Ultimately, too, it doesn't all fall on you. It falls on company officers to follow through because the training groups can only do so much. They can only go, "Hey, this is how we should perform. This is how we need to train." But at the end of the day, it falls on the company officer to fulfill that message down the line.
Right. Yeah, that, you know, this is so, yeah, like anything, we can run you through a drill out here. It might take an hour, 2 hours, burn through a bottle or two, but that company officer, yeah, you have to be, as a company officer and even as the firefighter, you have to step up and know your weaknesses. And as a company officer, I think it's really important to pick that up on your crew. "Hey, man, we kind of struggled on this. You know, that drill that we ran through out at training, that kind of showed us some weaknesses, whether it was we struggled with forcible entry or we really botched our hose stretch or whatever we were doing." So yeah, you have to, as a company officer, you have to, I feel like that's your sort of your responsibility to make sure overall your company is performing and they're up to par. And when they're not, you got to have those hard conversations sometimes, like, "Hey, man, this didn't go so well." And you know, that's when it's time to learn your mistakes or where you struggle was on the training grounds, because it's not fun. And I've been on that end of it too. It's not fun on the fire ground to figure out that, "Hey, I'm not as good as at this skill as I thought I was." And that's not when you really want to be humbled. I'd much rather be humbled out here on the training field than in somebody's front yard with a house burning down all around me.
Right. No, that's a fact. Okay. And it also helps too that, you know, within your backyard, you guys have the First in Fire conference
Yes.
where you can get all that information you just talked about, because I think that is the progression of a lot of departments where search was a task that they would accomplish, but with the data and all the facts and the calls, you know, being shown and proven, more departments are like, "Okay, we're going to do fire attack, but search is also a high priority."
Right. And man, that first in conference has just gotten huge. You know, Ryan has done a phenomenal job with that. And the one that's planned for this September, we'll have our new burn building should be up by then. And so there's the ones in the past, I think we've had like some, you know, some smoke and stuff and low vis. I think they've done some of those classes, but I think for this year there's going to be like actual hot classes with live fire, and so it's going to be next level. And I'm already, you know, I've already looked ahead. Me being 5 days a week now, I'm already planning on getting that on a calendar. Like, I'm not going to be available from this day to this day because I'm going to be a part of that conference, whether I'm just one of the hands out here working and shuttling supplies everywhere, but I'm going to be involved in that and hopefully be a participant because Ryan just he's got all those contacts, man, those connections, and just bringing in some top-notch guys and some guys that I've traveled long distances before to go and sit through their class or take one of their hands-on classes, and they're here. They're right here at my department. So, man, yeah, it's super good opportunity to be able to take advantage of that.
Definitely. Okay. All right. We're gonna switch gears a little bit. Physical fitness, how important is it in your opinion, physical fitness and the fire service?
Man, I can tell you for me, it's super important, right? I can't do my job if I can't catch my breath, right? If I'm too weak and I'm just gassed out going from the rig to the front door, and I've stretched a line and that's just completely burned me out, right? Or I forced a door and it's just completely taken me out. You can't, you know, it's just I don't remember. I read so much stuff, little things that come across the social media and everything. But you know, when one of them that I read said something to the effect of, you know, when you take the oath and you swear to protect other people's lives, then yeah, your physical fitness 100% affects how you perform, right? And it doesn't matter from the smallest little kid to a very large adult individual, when they call, I'm expected to, if family or whoever says, look, they're in there, then I'm expected to go get them. And physical fitness for me, when I first came on the job here, I wasn't as important. Of course, I was a lot younger then, and I think my body could compensate a lot as far as I could recover pretty quick. I wasn't where I needed to be physically, and that too, moving downtown was a wake up call because there was a lot of big buildings downtown and a lot of stair climbing, and that's just not going to cut it. You know, there's no excuse. I cannot have a fire on the fourth floor or fifth floor. We've got buildings way taller than that. And if it takes every bit of energy I've got just to get to the fire floor and then I'm spent, well, what good am I? So man, yeah, I can't stress enough how important physical fitness is and just being able to perform your job. It's not about, you know, looking cool in your uniform or your t-shirt or whatever. That's always like a, if that's what you're worried about, that's, you know, that's a side effect of being in good shape, but it's just being able to do what's expected of you. And you know, the old saying that's been around forever, everybody goes home. Everybody goes home. Well, I mean, yeah, things happen and this is a super dangerous job. And then there's a lot of stuff that does happen. There's too many risk factors out there that are beyond our control. And when you enter a burning structure, right? There's a lot of stuff in there that I don't know what's going to happen once I step through the threshold of the door. But I can 100% control my fitness level, you know, whether, you know, if I get taken out because a wall fell on me or something, then that's one thing, and that might be beyond my control. But if I get inside somewhere and I fall over from a, you know, a cardiac event or a stroke, then yeah, that's probably something I could have controlled that for the most part. You know, I can't show up being overweight, out of shape, eating 5 meals a day, fried food, and I love, man, I love it. I love good Southern fried food, fried everything, and so I have to control myself on that. But you know, watching what you eat, being smart about it, and being aggressive with your physical fitness, that's stuff you can control on the, you know, just on a daily basis. And what's the biggest killer of guys in the fire service? You know, it's heart
Heart
disease and
attacks.
stuff, heart attacks. So I can 100% reduce my risk of being that statistic by just being physically fit.
No, that's
So you
fact.
owe it not only to, you know, the people that you swore to protect and to the guys and girls that you work with, but I owe it to my family too. I got two kids that expect me to come home every day. And man, what a shame it would be to for them to learn one day that yeah, he didn't take care of himself, and so yeah, something bad happened. I would hate for them to I don't know. I don't want to. Does that make sense? Like
Nope,
I don't want to go out
absolutely.
that. I don't
Yeah.
want to go out like that because I just decided instead of being active, I just wanted to lay around every day.
No,
So
that's
yeah, it's
definitely.
got so physical fitness has it's important for a lot of reasons, you know, a lot of reasons.
No, I agree with you. I mean, we don't know how we're going to check out in the world, but I try to do it. Definitely, I know you do pretty much. We try to do what we can where we can take that variable of lack of physical fitness, heart attack off the table as best as we can. Because
Sure, yeah.
things happen, but there are certain things we can control. And like you said, that is a the fires aren't the structure, meaning like the fires aren't killing us, meaning when we respond to these fires, what's actually killing us is the heart attacks, the suicides. And yes, you do get your cancers and things like that, but heart disease, physical fitness, being in shape is something that we all can 100% control.
Right. And there's just too much research and too many numbers out there that show where it's related. And then Little Rock does a good job. In fact, it's coming up again. We have a agreement or contract or whatever with Arkansas Heart Hospital. And once a year we do a physical with the heart hospital where they I mean it's more than vital signs. They draw blood, they check your cholesterol levels, they do a CT scan, they look at your they look at your risk factors if you've got and they've detected some heart disease early on some guys or some clogged arteries and stuff and got it corrected before it turned into a problem. So we do a good job at, you know, taking care of our members and looking out for that. But yeah, you have to do your part too and keep yourself in shape. And I haven't run any of the firefighter challenge races in several years, but I got into that pretty hot and heavy years ago and was training with one of the guys here, or he's retired now, but he was big into it. And I don't know why. It's one of the things that was so simple when he said it, you know, because we would get out there and train and everything. And we'd train before work. We'd meet at 5 in the morning and we'd train for an hour and a half on firefighter combat challenge stuff. And man, this dude was just a machine, man, and would outrun me in all day and all night. And then one day he said, well, whatever happens today, you're ready, you know, because we talked about when that bell hits, you know, and they come across the speaker and they structure fire, commercial structure fire, whatever. That's not the first time within that shift that my heart rate has been up. Like I've already been training, I've already got my heart rate elevated, I've already been gassed out once, and so my body's already kind of conditioned. Like, okay, well here we go, and we're doing this again. So yeah, man, it's just keeping your mind and your body and everything ready. And so I really like I enjoy. I'm not a big just like weightlifter. I'm not just gonna go get on a bench and just do bench press or whatever. I include some weightlifting stuff into my fitness, but I like more the cardio or the high intensity stuff because that's more in line with what we do. I feel like a lot of just quick burst of high intensity, high energy stuff followed by some rest and recovery periods. And so, yeah, whenever we talked about that, I was like, man, I didn't think about that. That does make sense to just really get out here and really train hard for a little while. And so, yeah, now I do feel like I'm ready to go. Instead of being the other way and not being physically active, and then when the bell hits or you jump off the rig and you got fire showing out of three or four windows, and now your heart rate's 160, 170, and that's the first time your heart's had to work that hard in 2 or 3 weeks. That's not good, man. That's not good at all. So I like to, I guess I look at it that way. I kind of like to keep my heart and my mind ready, like a, you know. It's like people say, well, I've never had to run 2 miles on the fire ground. Like, no, I've never had to run that far, but I've definitely had my heart rate up 140 or above for 20, 30 minutes at a time. And that's what
Right.
it's about. You know, it's just getting your heart rate into that range and just being able to work and perform and not just completely gassing out after something, after an event like that.
Definitely. Definitely. Okay. realistic training. What kind of realistic training do you try to give to your members of Little Rock?
So realistic, and this is, I think, probably a more of a controversy than I even realized. Realistic training and gear, man, train, and not all the time. I mean, not, but realistically, training in all your gear, everything, coat, air pack, on air, and just like with the other stuff, you know, you don't want to go for weeks at a time and never get your heart rate up, and then all of a sudden you're at a fire, and now my heart's beating out of my chest, and I don't know what to feel or how to respond to that. Well, same thing with training in gear. I don't want to go for weeks and not remember what that feels like to train and have that air pack on and have the reduced visibility and being having to demand air out of your regulator because your respirations are up and everything, right? So I think we did a lot of drills when I was on company, full gear drills. Not all the time, because you know, I understand there's got to be a balance there, and you can't
Right.
just beat your crew down every day,
Right.
like, oh God, we got to get in all our stuff again. But at least every, I don't know, every third shift or so, we would be in all our gear. And so yeah, it's just being comfortable in your gear, and also those uncomfortable movements. All right. And I find we get with training some of these other companies, we get some pushback. Some of the stuff we can simulate low vis a lot. We can't always simulate in training environments. We can't always simulate high heat. So we have to, you know, hey, just use your imagination. It's high heat. You're going to have to get down. Whether you duck walk, you crawl, you tripod, whatever, you got to get down. But again, man, just being used to operating in those lower positions, because you can't just walk in. You're not going to just be upright and everything you go in. So learning how to operate like that. And that's where, I mean, yeah, I'd love to have a building out here and be able to light it on fire every day and have fire rocking out of windows and coming down the hallway, but that's just not reality. But we can get in our gear. We can train with reduced visibility, and so that's as realistic as we can get on, you know, a pretty regular basis.
Okay, love it. Training and gear. I mean, it's not a popular, to some, it's not a popular thing to do, but I think personally, it's necessary to get your body acclimated to weather, especially weather coming up for everybody, summer months.
Right.
Fires don't stop because it's hot. Usually they happen when it's high heat alert, high heat advisory. So the more comfortable you can get training in your gear, getting hot, keeping that heat trap, I think it actually makes you better. And I get it, it's an acquired taste for some, but for me, it's hands down been the greatest thing that I started to do.
Yeah, for sure. And I'm a summer person anyway. Like, it's, you know, the hotter it is outside, the happier I am. And I still, it doesn't, now it'll reduce my time in gear. You know, I may not go out and train for a solid hour in
30
full gear,
minutes, sure, yeah.
but yeah, you need to know. I think it's very important to know to get out and train and not just go through the motions and like, okay, you know, I got out here and I walked around the drill field for 30 minutes in gear. No, man, you got to get out there and do some work. And like you said, feel that heat just vibrating off that gear. It's like you're wrapped in a full blanket. You need to know what that's like. And it's a mental thing too. Is like, okay, so if I'm at a fire and I can just, all I can feel is my body heat just reflecting inside this gear, and it's miserable. And no, it's no fun. But then when I'm in that situation an hour later, if I was on company, like, all right, you know, I felt this. I know what this is like. Yeah, it's hot. It's 100 degrees outside. It's hot in my gear, but no big deal, because I trained like this yesterday or the shift before or whatever. So it doesn't just completely freak your mind out. And the same thing with being training on air, whether you use, whether you're actually on a bottle and you're breathing air, or like I use an elevation mask, or a lot of guys use the blast mask deal. And I've pushed myself hard enough training with that, right? And one of the things I want to do is I'll get through an exercise, so you see guys just want to rip their mask off and get that fresh breath of air. And I've literally, and this may sound silly, I've trained before with the elevation mask on, and literally been talking out loud to myself, like, you can breathe, you can breathe. Just telling myself over that, don't take the mask off, don't take it off. And I would pick a spot, because I'd complete whatever the exercise was I was doing, and I'd pick a spot on the drill field, whether it was a hydrant or the corner of a road or something. And I would just have that in my mind, like, I'm gonna walk down there, I'm gonna get my breathing rate down and my heart rate down, and then I'm gonna calmly take this mask off my face. And so again, it was a mental thing for me, because I don't want to ever get myself, and this is what, when I'm training recruits or whoever, the reason behind this, I don't want to get myself into a situation where my mind's freaking out and I just, oh my gosh, I can't catch my breath, and so I'm just gonna rip all this off my face. Like, so I would just have to calm myself down and tell myself, I'm not taking my mask or my elevation mask, whatever I'm wearing, I'm not taking it off until I get to this point over here. And then I'm not gonna be all dramatic, and I'm not gonna rip it off my face and throw my helmet on the ground and all that. I'm just gonna calmly unclip my helmet, unclick my regulator, and now we're going to take a few breaths of fresh air, and everything's all good. So yeah, physically, it's good to just physically have your body ready, but there's a big mental aspect to it as well, and just being able to control your mind and control those intrusive thoughts of wanting to just rip everything off your face, and it's hard not to. I mean, maybe if you're inside and you got smoke all around you, well, I can't take anything off in here because it's going to kill me. But outside, it's hard because you're in the sunshine and fresh air, and everything inside wants, like, get this mask off my face, I can't breathe. And so to be able to just take control of those thoughts and, like, no, just calm yourself down, and take your mask off in a minute. And so I think that's important, to be able to control, not let your mind get in a panic like that.
Absolutely. No, that's facts. Okay. Let's wellness and truly being there for one another. And I'm sure you've seen it with the First In Conference, with what Chief McCormick's doing for the whole entire state. That brotherhood, the camaraderie of, hey, we're gonna learn, we're gonna play, we're gonna teach. But when it comes to being there for an individual outside the fire department, how important is that?
So you're talking about just like when people got, stuff going on, whether it be at home or whatever. And man, I can tell you, because I've been on both ends of it. I've had, I've had people there for me when I've needed it. And then I think that's been helpful to have, when I've been in, been down about whatever, and had some guys either that have been through it before or just been there to listen. And it doesn't have to be, I mean, mental health, there's a big push for mental health, mental wellness across the job everywhere. And I'm not knocking that, right? I think counselors are important, and I think they can probably be very helpful to some. But man, I got two or three close friends at the fire department, and if there's something going on with me, then I would just almost rather just go sit on the back bumper and talk to one of them. And I like to be, I want to be that, at least, maybe not for everybody. You can't be everybody's best friend, but at least be some, the go-to guy for somebody, to when whatever's bothering them, whether it's home life, kids, or anything. Sometimes just people aren't coming to you looking for, sometimes they are looking for advice, sometimes they just got to get it out. And hey, this is going on and this sucks, and you know, everything's pissing me off right now. And sometimes all it takes is just having somebody else there to be listening and saying, man, yeah, that does suck. You know, you want to, you know, when we get off shift in the morning, let's, you know, let's go do something, or, you know, let's get together tomorrow on our first day off, and you know, whatever, you know, let's go have a beer or something. But there seems to be, and that was one of the things I really liked about my firehouse, was we were still a firehouse, and we still hung out a lot in the evenings and everything. And I feel like that has gone away at some fire stations, with the individual bedrooms and just everything else, all the other distractions, and people just kind of get away and spend a lot of time alone. And whether it be a bad call that you just went on, or something going on at home, you know, you're going to bring it to the firehouse with you. And just like you're going to take stuff from the firehouse, you're going to take it home with you. As much as people say, don't do that, it's going to happen. So, man, just being, you know, being at a firehouse and being able to sit around and just have a bitch fest, or just get some stuff off your chest, I think it's super important for the mental health side of it, to just to know, like, I mean, if you know, the way I see it, if I'm trusting these guys to at a fire, if I'm depending on them, and I might get myself in a bind, and I'm depending on them to get me out of it, or they may find themselves in a situation where I have to grab them and pull them out of a sticky situation. If we can trust each other in that aspect, then I should be able to, you know, it goes beyond just the fire scene. You should, you know, I want to be, and it's not a company officer thing. I just, as a firefighter, man, we all live in this house together. And if you need to come talk to me and get some stuff off your mind, then man, come talk to me. You know, we'll sit down, we'll talk all night. I don't care if we don't get any sleep. We may not run another call all night. We just sit here and you just tell me everything that's going on, and maybe I've got some advice that can help, or maybe you just need to get it out there and you just want somebody to listen. Then, man, I think that's super important.
Definitely.
And I didn't ever want to be that company officer or senior guy or whatever. If somebody came to me and they're like, hey, this is going on, whatever. And the first thing, because I've dealt with this before and had this happen to me. And so the first thing is, you know, company officers stop you and say, well, hey, let me stop you right here. Here's this phone number. I think you should call this, and let's get you some professional help. Man, that's, like I said, I'm not knocking that. I'm not knocking the counselors and the professional help that's available, but that's not the first thing I'm going to throw at you. If you come to me, if you're on my crew, or we work together. And I mean, even if we didn't, right? Even if somebody came out to me out here in the training division and said, if it's somebody that I didn't know that well, and they said, hey, I've heard you've had to deal with this before, and man, this is going on, and I don't know what to do. Well, dude, sit down and let's talk. Let's figure it out. You know, I'm not gonna be like, well, yeah, let me give you a phone number and call this person, and let's just get you on the path to getting some help. We're not going there. I'm not going that route. Not first off, anyway.
For sure. Okay. My last question, I like to always ask the guests, where would you like to see yourself before you decide to hang it up altogether?
Ooh, man. You know, I think with where I'm at now, you know, I would just like to see myself as, you know, somebody that, like I said earlier, anything I do or teach, whether it's out here or with Task Force One in another state, another town, whatever, you know, I would just like to see myself as somebody that, like probably a lot of guys tell you, that somehow I left the job better than I found it. And I don't, again, I don't take credit for anything Because everything I know, I've learned from somebody else. And I just feel like, hey, whatever knowledge I've got, especially in the training division, it's my job to spread that knowledge and to pass it out to everyone else that's willing to listen to it. And, so with the younger generation, coming up through the fire service, and so that's to me, I can tell you every one of my training officers when I got hired at Little Rock, right? How they all had an impact on me. And so it's weird now knowing that I may have that impact on the next several classes that come through Little Rock here. But I want to be, where I see myself is, hopefully that I'm passing on good information and I'm passing it on to the next generation of firefighters, and hopefully they take that, they build off of it, and hey, here's something I learned from this old training captain, and man, this has really helped me in my career, and now they're going to pass it on, and so that's all I want to do, man, is that I just want to be able to give people the knowledge and skills, whatever I know, just be able to pass that on and help them out in their career, and hopefully. And I like to keep people engaged, right? I love to see people motivated and into the job. And so I hope to, I don't know, I feel like I keep repeating myself on that, but just pass on what I know and not hoard anything, not keep anything to myself. And that's it, man. If that makes sense. I don't know if that makes sense or not.
Oh, it does. I get it. I get it. But I also would like to say there's a reason why Chief McCormick, when I asked him, was like, "Hey, Chief, do you know anybody else that that's awesome in the fire service that has that great positive mentality?" He named you, which is how this is happening here. So obviously, what you are doing, other people are seeing, and you are making that impact.
Cool, man. That's yeah. He didn't. He reached out to me and he said, "Hey, would you be interested in doing a podcast?" And I was like, "Sure." And the first thing I thought, I was like, "Man, what is this dude into now?" Because he's already doing so much. And I was like, "Now Ryan's got his own podcast." I was like, "Man, there's like, I don't think he sleeps ever." And he said, "Well, I'm gonna give your name and number to a guy." And I was like, "Oh, okay, so you're not doing it." He's like, "No, I'm not doing it." And I was like, "Oh, okay, cool." Which I think yeah, if he did decide to start doing that, he'd be great at it. But man, I appreciate it. And that means a lot to me, that you reached out to me and that Chief McCormick even mentioned me because like we know, man, that guy, he's plugged in and he knows. He's got a ton of contacts, and so for him to think that I'm worthy enough to get on here and talk about my passion and love for the job, then that's pretty cool. And man, for you to reach out to me, it's we could talk about it. We could talk about the job. I'm one of them. I'd sit here until 5 o'clock this afternoon and talk to you if it kept going, because it's just what I enjoy doing.
Definitely. No, it definitely shows. But and also you too, the workouts you post, you don't I don't know very many training chiefs that stay engaged as you do as far as working out in gear and trying to better yourself every single day. So that is also a testament to you're not only talk the talk, but you walk the walk as well.
Well, I've got just a little bit of a competitive side to me, which is, I guess, a good thing and a bad thing. But like I said, these recruits stay the same age every year, and I keep getting a year older.
That's right.
And I've got just a little bit of mindset like you guys aren't going to outwork me. Now there's some that come along and yeah, they're absolute studs, and it doesn't matter what I do, I'm not going to keep up. But yeah, I'm not going to be the as long as I'm out here. I'm not going to be that person that's just sitting in a chair and pointing and yelling and saying, "Hey, go do this. All right, do it again, do it again." And no, if we're going to the top of the drill tower, then yeah, I'm going up there too. I'm either going to be leading the way or I'm going to be following you guys. And then if we decide to do it again, guess what? I'm doing it again. And that's one thing that our training chief has was really harping on too was you're not going to ask these recruits or make the recruits do anything that you're not willing to do yourself. And so, and sometimes it's a gut check here. A few weeks ago, we had a 2 mile run in the rain and came in that morning. It was one of the other training captains. He said, "Hey, here's what we're going to do for PT this morning." And man, I just wasn't feeling it at all at first, but I was like, okay, well, too bad. I'm going to get my gear on and we're going to go out here and we're going to trudge through the rain for 2 miles. And then like any workout, you know, and I don't remember who said this. I've never regretted a workout, no matter what it is. I've dreaded a lot of workouts before. I've dreaded the crap out of them. But then once it's all said and done, it's like, okay, cool. Now I feel better. So I've never regretted a workout. It's just sometimes getting going, and you can't depend on motivation all the time. Yeah, sometimes I show up and I'm coffeeed up and I got a lot of caffeine coursing through my veins and I'm like, yeah, let's go, let's do it. But some mornings is not like that, and it's just, no, it's going to happen, and I can just sit here and dread it, or I can get out there and get my butt moving, and the sooner I get moving, the sooner I get done. And then once it's all said and done, it's like, okay, cool. We got that done. It wasn't that terrible.
Right. Right. And in hindsight, holding yourself to that standard.
Right. Yeah. So it's, and that's, I think it makes a difference with recruits too. And I don't know if it's a generation thing or I don't remember when I went through the academy, I don't remember the instructors doing the exercises with us, the PT and everything. It was more of, you know, we're going to yell at you and you're going to run another lap or you're going to do more push-ups. But I feel like that makes a difference, or at least I hope it does. And like, okay, hey, here's what we're doing and I'm doing it too. And so, yeah, I'm out here sweating and suffering just as much as you guys are. And so I think that hopefully, you know, you earn respect like that instead of just demanding it. And, you know, look at the bugles on my collar and listen to what I say. Like, no, I'm going to show you guys I can work. I can do it too. Maybe I don't do it as fast as you guys, but I can still do the work. And I feel like you earn respect more by taking that approach.
Definitely. No, for sure. Okay. Well said, Chief. Sorry. I'm just called you Chief. That's fourth habit. Bo, I really appreciate you coming on, speaking a good word. I appreciate Chief McCormick for letting this happen, making this connection. And sure. I just want to tell you, don't ever change. Continue doing what you're doing. I think you are making a positive impact, because for me personally, whether you're an officer, a training officer, a training chief, if you still get in the trenches with the men and women of your organization, to me at least, that speaks volumes. So continue doing what you're doing. And I appreciate you coming on and spreading the good word today.
Well, man, I appreciate you. Appreciate you having me. It's been fun.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
If any of the listeners out there are or know of a great firefighter who embodies the principles of being a great communicator, goal-oriented, hardworking, humble, passionate, and professional, regardless of rank, career, or volunteer, contact me at studentofthegamefirepodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, stay focused, stay committed, and stay safe.